You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including a devastating fire in Arcata, what happens next after a Josephine County recall, and turmoil at the Jackson County Library. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And Justin, you covered a tragic fire in Arcata. Tell us what happened there.
Yeah, so this fire was downtown. This was last Friday, and we don't know how it was caused yet, but there were strong winds that day, and that probably contributed to it spreading so quickly. But the blaze destroyed some pretty iconic buildings and businesses right in the center of downtown there. That includes Northtown Books, Danders Board Games and Books, Global Village Gallery, Hensel Ace Hardware Shop. In total, 7 businesses were completely destroyed. Five businesses were damaged, and the apartments above those businesses were also destroyed. So this was a big fire. I interviewed the Arcata Fire District Chief, and he said they called up basically every resource they could in Humboldt County to fight this. Luckily, there were no injuries or deaths, but there was an estimated about $18 million in property damage.
Oh, wow. So this was, as you mentioned, kind of a historic part of Arcata. How did the community react?
People were devastated. You know, I know for myself, whenever I visit Arcata, I would always go to Northtown Books. It was a great little bookstore. It had served Arcata for over 60 years, so really an institution in the area. And just luckily, you know, people are very bummed, but luckily the fire didn't spread further. Firefighters were able to spare the nearby Minor Theater. That's one of the oldest theaters in the country, actually. And that would have also hit me very hard. I usually go to the bookstores and the old movie theaters when I visit that area. But right now there's just a lot, you know, big lot of rubble where these businesses and these structures were. And I can only imagine, you know, how hard it is for locals just driving past that and seeing this structure, these buildings for decades and them not being there any longer. People have set up a number of GoFundMe pages for residents and businesses, so they've kind of come together in that regard.
And do we know how long the investigation into the fire will take?
We don't, but these things can be lengthy. That's what the fire chief told me. You know, he said he had actually responded to a similar fire downtown decades ago. That was when he was just a volunteer. And he explained that the city's downtown buildings, which are very old, very, very charming, they're lovely, but they can pose these unique fire risks. There's been a lot of renovations and remodels over the years, and that can create these void spaces in the buildings, which allow the fire to spread laterally. So you might not realize the fire is below you or above you in the attic, and it can spread very quickly. We don't know what caused the fire, but these structures are kind of prone to that. You know, hopefully these businesses can come back. The owner of Northtown Books at least said she hopes to rebuild, and so I think the community, and personally, I would really like to see that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Justin.
Maria, we're going to turn to you. Josephine County voters recalled Commissioner Chris Barnett earlier this week. What do those results tell us?
Well, it wasn't close. 62% of people who voted supported the recall. 38% were opposed. And that suggests some pretty strong dissatisfaction there. Turnout was about 30% of registered voters. Again, this was a special election over the holidays, too. So turnout in these sorts of elections is often low and really only draws the most motivated voters.
Yeah, for sure. What were the core issues behind this recall?
Well, recall supporters cited basically dissatisfaction with county leadership over the past year, if I were to summarize things. The key issue, county restructuring, which led to layoffs and job consolidations. And really what petitioners were arguing as part of that was that too much authority was given to then board chair Andreas Bleck. Decisions were made without oversight. He was basically given a lot of authority that is uncommon. And then that didn't sit right with the petitioners. There was also a voluntary buyout program as part of that cost the county about $700,000. And we should note, Bleck was also the subject of a recall petition, but he resigned early last month after those signatures were verified. Other flashpoints in this recall were a vote to terminate the library lease early, and then an Oregon Supreme Court ruling involving one of Barnett's businesses. Now, Barnett, of course, disputes these claims and says the recall was politically motivated and the work of a disgruntled former county employee.
Okay, there's a lot there. So where does this leave the Josephine County Board of Commissioners now?
Well, until the vote is certified, Chris Barnett is still a voting member of the commission, along with his fellow commissioner, Ron Smith. There has been some county business getting voted on and getting done, but those two have really been at a standoff over appointing someone to fill Bleck's seat for the past month.
So why hasn't the county filled that vacant commission seat?
Well, as we mentioned, former Commissioner Andreas Bleck resigned in early December. The remaining two commissioners have 30 days to appoint a replacement. And Smith has basically, he's recused himself from the process. He cited political pressure and concerns about backroom deals. And without him there voting, there hasn't been a quorum to really hold that vote, which you need. So that 30-day deadline, it expired just before the election.
Okay, so without the quorum, who has the authority to appoint a new commissioner?
Well, now that the 30-day deadline has passed, County Legal Counsel says that authority now shifts to a temporary panel of other elected officials. That provision exists in the county charter for situations where the commissioners can't act or can't reach a conclusion, maybe one person is backing one, candidate, another, and they don't agree. Barnett disputes that interpretation. He is arguing he's still in office and says the commission, seat isn't, his commission seat is not technically vacant yet. And basically, he's saying, Ron Smith has prevented him from acting on his right to vote on this. And things got a little heated between Barnett and Smith at a workshop meeting Wednesday. Barnett argues that Smith's recusal has, as I mentioned, prevented him from doing his job.
So I'm an elected official too, and my constituents are saying, and do your job. So it's like, if you're gonna take away my right to vote because you choose to recuse yourself,
well, just took away your right.
Yeah, but we did. And you know what? As long as you're not doing your job, you're probably next.
So as you can hear, that was just a little taste of how things have been going. It's been a lot of sniping back and forth. And for his part, Smith is saying his decision not to participate is allowed under his discretionary rights as an elected official.
Okay, there's a lot going on there. So what happens next?
Well, County Legal Counsel Wally Hicks said the safest option would be to wait until the recall is certified. That would mean Barnett is no longer in office, and that would help avoid legal challenges to any appointment. But he hasn't officially decided whether to recommend that to the temporary panel. The temporary panel does have a meeting scheduled Monday, so something could happen as soon as then. And waiting until any election result is certified, that would be at least a couple more weeks.
Great. Thanks, Maria.
Well, thank you, Jane. And Jane, you've been following your own turmoil, this time in Jackson County, at the Jackson County Library District, to be specific. First, what is that all about?
So this is all basically stemming from some incidents that allegedly occurred at the talent branch of the Jackson County Library District. There were reports back in December that there was a patron at the library watching videos of naked children and babies on a library computer, making people uncomfortable. Some have called what he was watching child pornography. It was allegedly videos of kids in the bath and of a baby's diaper being changed. So the police were called. Talent Police Department is currently investigating. The DA is investigating. But there has been some pushback to how the library administration handled that situation. Some people seem to think they didn't take it seriously enough. At first, that patron had a one-week suspension of library privileges. Later, they extended that suspension and they permanently revoked his internet access. So the library says it's taking this very seriously. They're reviewing their policies, training staff, strengthening sort of safeguards to make sure nothing like this ever happens again. But some residents have brought concerns to the library's board of directors about these incidents.
And what happened at the board meeting Monday?
So the board voted to place the library director, Carrie May, on administrative leave for about 2 weeks until the board meeting on January 21st, while the board figures out best next steps. Carrie May has been there for over 7 years. Some people had some really wonderful things to say about her during public comment and praising her leadership. And some people had some more negative things to say about her and what they called a toxic and corrupt leadership. May herself didn't comment during the public portion of the meeting, and she's now on paid admin leave. The board is her boss, and the argument is sort of that the buck stops at the top, so they've decided to sort of put her on leave while they figure out what they're going to do next.
And then the board met a second time this week?
They did. They met twice this week. They met again on Wednesday night for an executive session, which was quite long. It was, you know, over two hours. And then when they came out, they made a few different motions. So number one, they've decided that they're going to work with an HR firm to investigate these talent incidents and provide some recommendations to make sure nothing like this happens again in the future, how to prevent that. Number two, they're going to get a cost and time frame estimate from an investigative company to potentially investigate the alleged HR issues, including retaliation, issues with workplace culture, things that people have brought up in public comment and elsewhere. Number three, they're also going to have the library's attorney talk to an employment and labor attorney to get some specific legal guidance on a few questions that they have. And then number four, they also want to get the raw data from a staff climate survey that the library did so they can have that information about how staff feel about the library climate. So they're sort of working on it. Those are the motions that they made this week. And Carrie May is on leave until January 21st. So we'll have to see what happens next and what conclusions they come to.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jane. Justin, you also had a story about an activist suing the city of Ashland. He's claiming the city violated his freedom of speech. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So Torin McKnight is a local progressive activist. He's a founder of Rogue Valley Pepper Shakers. That's a progressive organization here in the Rogue Valley. And in September, he was speaking during public comment at the Ashland City Council meeting. You know, for those not super familiar, not watching these meetings like we do, the public is allowed to speak for a set amount of time. And McKnight was specifically speaking about a change in Ashland's enhanced law enforcement areas. So these areas allow the police to ban repeat offenders. And the change had to do, we have stories on this, but the change had to do basically whether someone must be convicted of multiple crimes or just charged before they're banned. And that change did end up passing. But McKnight was against this expansion of the law enforcement areas, and he read from a prepared statement, you know, in a pretty even tone, but linking the enhanced law enforcement areas to the Trump administration. And where he got in trouble is when he called Ashland's police chief, Ty O'Meara, a fascist. And when he called him a fascist, he was cut off by the mayor during his public comment.
Well, why was he cut off?
So Ashland City Council meetings have a rule against personal attacks. So it seems like the mayor thought he violated that rule by calling O'Meara a fascist. He was told to stop talking. You know, his public comment period was over. And while he was returning to his seat, he did get a couple more comments in. And then police removed him from the meeting. And that was allegedly for disorderly conduct, according to the lawsuit. I will say I watched the video. McKnight remained pretty calm throughout, besides those couple comments on his way back to his seat. But then, you know, he just sat down. And then the police were told to remove him from the meeting.
So the lawsuit claims this removal violated his freedom of speech protections?
Right. The complaint says that, you know, as citizens, we're allowed to call officials fascists, basically. That's protected political speech. It doesn't matter if it's not true or it hurts someone's feelings. That's a right we have under the Constitution. So the lawsuit says this policy that Ashland has against personal remarks is, first, it's too broad because it can include political speech, which might be taken as a personal attack. And also it was applied in an unconstitutional way in McKnight's case. He was just giving his political opinion. He was giving his political opinion, and he should have been allowed to do that.
And what is McKnight seeking from this lawsuit?
So McKnight's seeking an injunction from the lawsuit for them to stop that policy of their personal attacks for public comment. He's also seeking damages. The lawsuit names the city, the mayor, the police chief, and an officer that removed McKnight from the meeting. But it's a really interesting case. We see videos all the time of people getting cut off and removed from public meeting, yeah. And it brings up this interesting question about what's allowed under the First Amendment in terms of personal attacks and political speech.
Okay, well, thank you, Justin. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.